There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast live from Wimbledon on day 9 of Wimbledon, where it is a mere 8:05 p.m. I'm Catherine Whittaker, Matt Roberts is here, David Law is here. He was in the BBC Radio commentary box about 14 seconds ago. So I'll let you catch your breath,
I've
David.
Never run that fast in my life.
I'll let you catch your breath while we introduce, for the first time this Wimbledon, Daily Telegraph's tennis correspondent, Simon Briggs. Simon, hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
I mean, out of breath in David's case, but otherwise great, I think. How are you?
I'm really cold.
This is a warm one tonight, Simon. Trust us.
This is my mistake. I wore shorts to Wimbledon. You should never wear shorts to Wimbledon.
We do get quite a lot of feedback on the live chat when we look cold. We're told to look less cold. So if you could do your best acting job tonight, Simon, that would be much appreciated. Today is the day that our first semi-finals have been set. We have one men's semi-final. We have one women's semi-final set up. And while chronologically the men's is where we just come from, David's been commentating on Andrei Rublev winning for a bit over Novak Djokovic and then inevitably very much not winning. We're going to start with the women, I think, because that's where the great matches were and that's where the storyline lies today, because not only did we lose world number one Iga Świątek, but we lost her to who is fast becoming the story of the tournament, if she wasn't already, and that is Elena Svitolina.
It's astonishing. It's astonishing what she's doing, because you think you know someone. You think you, after, what is it, probably 8 to 10 years of watching Elena Svitolina, you know what you're dealing with, who you're dealing with, what she's got, what she hasn't. And then she has found something that I don't even know if she knew she'd got, because the level of tennis she played today and has been playing for a few days was just mesmerising. She kind of took it to Iga Świątek. I'm sure there were mitigating factors. I think you probably watched that match more closely than I did, because I was in the other commentary box. But whenever I was looking up, Elena Svitolina was hitting a winner at an important moment. And then, you know, I left it at once at all to go and have a bit of lunch. And the next thing I know, it's 4-1 to Svitolina.
When you texted in that moment to say I'm off for lunch, I thought, that is a terrible time to have. What are you doing, David? I know a man's got to eat, but this is not the time.
Trying to find the time is tough, isn't it?
Yes. Now, we always encourage David to eat, because sometimes it gets to 10 o'clock at night and David's like, I haven't eaten since 11 in the morning. But, you know, we said the other day that Elena Svitolina had changed as a tennis player. You know, we've been saying that ever since she came back, but it was particularly noticeable against Azarenka, because that was a matchup that she had not done well in the past. She'd lost all 5 of those matches. Even after watching that against Azarenka, I still felt like she would needed to have changed a bit more to be able to beat Iga Świątek. You know, the players Iga Świątek tends to lose to do have big power. They're able to take advantage of her second serve. And I just thought, yes, Svitolina has developed, but has she developed that much? Well, the answer was yes, and it was pretty emphatic, because she was doing all the things that you have to do against Iga Świątek. She was pummeling Świątek's second serve, and she was exposing the forehand and rushing it and drawing errors from that side, and doing it in a Grand Slam quarterfinal against a big-name player. These are not things that Elina Svitolina used to do. I just remembered back to that quarterfinal she played at Roland Garros in 2020 when she lost to Nadia Podoroska. And we spoke then about how safe she used to play. And she used to invite players onto her to play their game. None of that today. She is transformed. And this is probably the first time I've ever felt like Elina Svitolina could actually win a Grand Slam tournament. I don't know whether I'm predicting that, but I feel she's got it in her now.
I think Simon is getting excited just hearing you say that, Matt, because Simon, you seem to be excited about the Elina Svitolina story in a way that you would be if she were a British player. This is a big deal story in terms of your readers, right? And in terms of the cut through that we always refer to.
Well, regular listeners will know that my takes are often very selfish, because it's all about who's going to get the eyeballs I need for my day job. And when Katie Bolter went out on Saturday night, I was in despair, wondering where my next storyline was going to come from. And absolutely, it's just like having a British player in the second week. And I felt the crowd have completely adopted her. And she's become a folk hero almost overnight at Wimbledon. And actually, sitting on centre court in the first set, I thought the crowd were worth at least a game. Maybe two games. I thought the energy was a little low in the early stages, and then as we got towards the close of that first set, I thought they really got behind Svitolina, and I felt like Świątek might have been a bit worried by them. And I asked her about it. I asked Świątek.
My favourite moment of the day.
Yeah, trying to make honorary Brit happen.
She shut me down. She did not want to talk about that. Now, I don't know whether that means I'm talking rubbish or it meant that I was getting close to something, but either way, that was my sense of it, that wave of support just really added to her momentum.
After the sort of slightly tense exchange where she queried what on earth you were on about, Świątek, is that an accurate summary?
I said we've made her an honorary Brit, and she said, well, she's Ukrainian. she's Ukrainian, anyway.
She then went on to say, I didn't notice the crowd. I didn't notice who they were cheering for.
And I don't care.
And she said, I don't care, which sort of suggested you did notice, but... How could you not notice? They are heartwarmingly, I think, it's nothing against any of her opposition, heartwarmingly embracing of Elina Svitolina. Is it just that she's Ukrainian and is so emblematic of Ukraine right now in terms of how much she's embracing, representing Ukraine and everything that means? Is that all it is? Are there other elements to how much she's cutting through?
That's 90% of it. I mean, look, the motherhood is an element here, and I think she said those are the two factors that have made me a different person. As well as she said also that I feel like I'm running out of time. I've got to go for it because I've got more of my career behind me than I have in front of me, and there's no time to lose. But this reinvention is extraordinary, and just to follow on from what you were saying, I turned on the replay button, clicked on 1-1 third set, and she went forehand winner, both off second serves. And there's no way the old Elina Svitolina does that. You just couldn't imagine it.
Yeah, David, you were saying, I don't know whether Elina Svitolina realised she had this in her. Well, I think she surely didn't, because she didn't used to have this in her, I don't think. I know there is a change in attitude to her game, and, you know, technically and tactically she is doing different things with the help of Raymond Sloiter, but I don't think this would have been possible. Świątek referred to Svitolina's guts today, didn't she? She said, look, I've played her before, and she wasn't like that, quite frankly. She was really taken aback by the steel and the viciousness of Svitolina today.
Well, she actually had a nice phrase. She said she let her hand go. And that was what was happening on the forehand side. And she was kind of bossing a lot of the forehand rallies, and that's not something you would have expected from this matchup.
And Iga Świątek used the same word that Azarenka had used, freedom, to talk about what it feels like Svitolina now has on the court. And, yeah, I mean, Svitolina said that war has changed her, and she said she now looks at things differently on the court. If she's in a bad situation on the court, if she's in a bit of trouble, she's sort of now able to tell herself, well, you know, it's not the biggest deal in my life anymore. And, you know, it's still a huge deal. It still means everything. But she's able to put it in a bit better context and, I think, keep playing her own game. And, yeah, she's just dealing with difficult situations better on the court, as well as this sort of transformative effect of her game.
That is the secret sauce, isn't it? The sweet spot that is so unattainable for so many players, wanting it as much as anyone, if not more, and yet it not meaning everything to you.
Oh, yeah. It's so difficult to attain. I agree with you. And I think she was always the player that would hit a cross-court backhand in response to a cross-court backhand, really. When it really mattered, she would lock down and she would do what came naturally to her, which is play cautious, safe, conservative tennis very well, but it didn't win you those moments. It wouldn't take the play away. She was hoping somebody was going to miss. And now that's not what's happening. She's spreading the court. She's opening it up and she's spotting opportunities that I just don't think occurred to her before in the tight moments. And I'm definitely looking at her through a different lens altogether in terms of how she plays the rest of this tournament.
What happened to the Iga Świątek forehand today, and how worried should we be about the potential that that shot clearly has on today's evidence to just desert her?
It's a grass court phenomenon, isn't it? I felt like as long as the ball was short, she was able to play her usual forehand with all its heavy spin, and then she could spread the court as she wanted. As soon as the ball was under her feet, as soon as it was low, she had no touch, did she? She didn't know whether it was going long or in the net, or even wide. It was absolutely like a guesswork. She just panicked almost as soon as the depth was on her. And I think that will not be an issue as soon as she gets off the grass and goes, phew, that's that done for another year, and back on hard courts. I think she'll be herself again.
Yeah, I mean, it really was, you know, as much as Svitolina was able to dictate the match with her own aggression that we've just talked about, the Iga Świątek forehand was a real marker of where this match was headed. You know, she started that second set tiebreak with a flurry of forehand errors, and it was really running away from her. And then suddenly she found the forehand and hit a load of winners, and it was that shot was sort of dictating everything. I think the most alarming period of the match for Świątek was the end of the first set, where she was 5-3 up, 30 love up in that game. She then lost 16 of the next 18 points, including 11 in a row at one stage, to lose the set. And I thought, that word that Simon just used, panic, I still find it a bit of an odd phenomenon to watch Iga Świątek, because she's a great, you know, she has won 4 slams already, and yet she does seem to get quite tight in matches. And it's not the feeling I have when I watch other really great players, where you expect them to do something brilliant. I'm almost more surprised that she came up with those amazing forehands at 4-1 down in the second set tiebreak than I was that the errors came in the first place, in a way. And I don't know whether that's just a me problem. She's obviously proved herself time and time again, and this was actually the first time she'd lost a deciding set at a slam in a very long time. She has done well in big moments, in big matches, but there is a nervousness, a tightness to her in them. And I think we really saw that in the exchange that she had with her coaching team at the end of that first set. That was not a player who was fully in control and sort of knew where that match was going.
Yeah, so she loses the first set. Then it all sort of started happening at once, didn't it? Then the rain comes, or the threat of rain comes. They start closing the roof. Iga Świątek then takes the opportunity to jog over to her coaching box and have an extremely tense exchange. Not quite as tense as her exchange with you, Simon, but pretty tense, with her whole coaching team, but particularly directed, I think, towards Daria Abramovic, her psychologist. She was asked about this in the press conference afterwards, what was said between you both there, and did they go off court? They did go off court for a few minutes, didn't they? Yeah, and also when they went off court, and she said, I don't want to tell you. I don't want to tell you because it's sort of the secret recipe, I suppose, although not one for success today. But it it didn't look, I know it was a really stressful situation, as stressful as it gets, but it didn't look harmonious, did it?
Daria was doing all the talking, wasn't she? It was actually interesting because afterwards Iga said that I wanted somebody to analyse from outside what was happening because I thought they'd have a better take on it. But I don't know, Daria has taken over as that team manager, and it was her who took the lead rather than her coach, Thomas. Is it Thomas?
Thomas.
It was a little surprising. And meanwhile, Raymond Sluiter was looking quite serene, wasn't he? I think he deserves a word of credit because even though Svitolina's got the desire to be a more aggressive player, I think he's equipped her in these months, and I think she's changed her strings as well. And these little things are all adding up. So he's one of the great men of the tour. If you've ever, I know David knows Raymond, he's an absolute diamond. So I'm really pleased for him that he's doing well.
He's been doorstepped by David this week. Official segment.
Do you know what his parting words to me were? I still like snooker. Because 20 years ago, we bonded over snooker, over a common love of snooker.
Mark Selby was here the other day.
Yeah, so he would have swooned if he'd have seen Mark Selby. He's an absolutely fanatical man for snooker. But I'd completely forgotten about that until he reminded me.
I got to know him when there was a tennis murder. Do you remember that story?
Okay, this is why we got Simon on.
We are live, Simon.
Did it involve Robin Haase?
It involved Robin Haase. There was a tennis murder that involved Robin Haase's support staff. And I went up to Raymond Sluiter, didn't know him from Adam, and said, would you mind talking me through this? He said, sure, sit down, I'll tell you everything.
What was everything? What did he tell you?
Well, just, It was in the end that the former coach of Robin Haase was imprisoned for murdering a benefactor who travelled with the group. We didn't know the outcome at that stage, but he gave me the background.
True crime crossover podcast waiting to happen, Simon. we'll talk later. Yeah. Can Svitolina win Wimbledon?
I would be surprised if she won Wimbledon.
Is that a nod of agreement with David, Matt, or a nod of agreement with the statement that she could win Wimbledon?
I think she can win Wimbledon.
Is she in the mix?
I think now, yes. Okay. For me, I don't think I would be surprised from here. I'm not predicting it. I think Sabalenka and Rybakina I would put ahead of her. But I don't think I would put anyone else.
Pick her to beat Vondrousova.
Think so,
I think she's going to make the final.
Vondrousova.
Oh, what a story. If Lina Svitolina makes this final, what a story that is.
Well, Simon seeing stars.
Well, there is obviously the potential for a pretty politically charged final. I mean, that would be quite a challenge to cover. But I think we'd have a fair few news reporters descending upon centre court as well as the tennis folk.
If Felina Svitolina reaches the Wimbledon final, frankly, already, to be honest, but I think Harry Styles should be coming to see Alina Svitolina, not Alina Svitolina going out of her way to see Harry Styles.
Matt.
We need to turn the tables on this.
Very good.
You're welcome on the podcast anytime, Harry.
Yeah. You should do a private
I like where your head's at.
A private concert for him.
Oh, here. Would that be a bit awkward? I always think those private concerts sound...
No, you can just set up here. We'll just invite her onto our set and then he can do his stuff and we'll be like a combo.
Sold. Sold. Someone somewhere needs to make that happen. Let's talk about who she's going to face in that semi-final. Well, we've given the game away, haven't we? Marketa Vondrousova. The ever inexplicable Marketa Vondrousova, who had never been beyond the second round at Wimbledon before this year. And here she is in the semi-finals, and she's as surprised as us, David.
Is she? Yeah. That's I mean, this is the woman who I had in... Did I ever in the final or in the semis at Roland Garros? Certainly deep. And then Matt and I turn up to Vondrousova against Kasatkina, lovely day on court, Susan Longland, and she blows it spectacularly. Okay, also Kasatkina was good, but I didn't even look at her name in this draw, if I'm honest. And here she is.
Yeah, you commentated this match, David?
I did, yeah. It's a very strange match.
So every Vondrousova match is quite strange.
Yeah, and look, the subplot is what happens to Jessica Pegula when she gets into Grand Slam quarterfinals. This was her sixth one. This is the first time she's playing somebody she really is supposed to beat. Yes, she played Azarenka last time, but You know, I think Azarenka's been there and done it. She was supposed to win this one. She lost to Barty. She lost to Świątek a couple of times. And she goes two love up. Then she goes behind. And then it, after she's won the opening set, it just all starts to go wrong. And I mean, you know, in the third set, she was 4-1 up. She had a point for 5-1. And it looks done. And I don't know, I didn't get a chance to go to her press conference or read the transcript, but I mean, does she feel like she blew it, or was it taken from her? Because my take on it was Vondrousova started to play a different level, but still, point for 5-1.
It's never 100% one thing or the other, is it? I think Pegula blew it a little bit. She went for a couple of big shots. There's sort of two stages of blowing it. She fails to convert the double break, and then she gets broken back, and it's 4-all. But she's still absolutely in the match at 4-all. She goes for a couple of lines in that game. She goes really big, and she misses them to go 15-30. And Hannah was really hot on this, and she said you could just see her shoulders slump. You could see the moment where she internally went, it's going to happen again. And at that point, she starts playing safe. You can see her hitting down the middle of the court more and more, and she's sort of laying it on a plate for Vondrousova to take. And I do think Vondrousova took it, and credit to her, but the opportunity was made available.
Yeah, I mean, that 4-all game was extraordinary. There was a 26 shot rally and a 31 shot rally, and the level was really, really high, I felt, from both players.
Everyone was loving it except Holger Rune.
Yes, that, well done. I made that point earlier and made a mental note to mention it on the podcast and had forgotten.
Why was he not loving it?
Because he wants to get rid of Deuce. He thinks that would be, quote, more fun.
He needs to just carry on playing.
He needs to get his head straight.
Come on, Holger. Sort it out.
I mean, I think I was so impressed with how Jessica Pegula initially turned this match around, because she was playing a Vondrousova match in the first set, and she didn't want to be. You know, every time Vondrousova was...
Nobody wants to be.
Every time she was junking the ball or slow-balling or drawing Pegula forward, it seemed like Vondrousova would win the point. And in the second set, Pegula really managed to come to the net on her terms rather than on Vondrousova's terms. It was the same tactic that Keys adopted to turn the match around against Andreeva, coming forward. And Pegula's got really underrated hands. I think you mentioned it the other day, David. Like,
she's great hands on the baseline too.
Hands on the baseline to retrieve, and decent hands up at the net as well. And ESPN had a stat up that she was hitting 45% of her shots in the second set inside the baseline, compared to only 28% in the first set. It was a huge difference. She then carries that forward into the third set. She goes 3-1 up, and I think a really big turning point in this match was when the roof had to close. The rain was coming. It wasn't actually falling yet, but because the game had finished, they thought, well, let's close the roof now. Pegula looked gutted about that. She'd just broken. And she maybe did have time to serve and get to 4-1, but I think it was probably the right call to close the roof, because, you know, we spoke earlier about in the week about how they've bungled some of the roof closures.
I've not used that word in the print at least
this week. So, you know, it was a good call probably by the tournament. It was just rough on Pegula that it happened then. However, she comes out of that rain delay, and as David said, she manages to hold. She gets the break point for 5-1. So, yes, it had interrupted her, but she had also resumed the match playing well. And that was, you know, that was the moment. The backhand she missed at 5-1. And after that, yes, she maybe will have some regrets, but Vondrousova played so well and so quickly. They both play really quickly between points that It just sort of ran away from Pegula. And, Vondrousova's a shot maker, and she started making them. I think it was easier for her to play her game, which is, you know, she's creative. She needs to be loose and free. It was easy to do that in the first set. It's the first set. And it was maybe a bit easier to do that when she was down in that third set as well. There was suddenly a bit less pressure on her, whereas all the pressure was on Pegula because finally she was in a winning position in a quarterfinal. And I did listen to her press conference afterwards. It was very late because she then had to play doubles.
Lose doubles,
smashed the racket in her doubles. She was asked in the press conference whether she smashed her racket out of anger. And she said, "Do you think I smashed it because I was happy?"
That's even worse than the response I got.
And I got the sense that, you know, when she was sort of chugging on that beer in the press conference last year after another quarterfinal defeat, I felt like she was really fed up with the situation then. You know, she kept running into, as David said, Świątek or Barty. Today it felt a bit more like she was a bit gutted with herself. You know, I think she really knew that one was, as great as Vondrousova was, she had that match.
And that the mental baggage now accumulates. Imagine the next time she's in that situation. I do think she'll get in that situation again because, by and large, the odd bad performance here and there, and I was disappointed with her in Paris, but it was partly because I'd predicted her to win that day and I thought she was a banker. Anyway, by and large, she achieves her seeding, doesn't she? She's very, very consistent. I expect her to get herself into that position again. Do I expect her to ever necessarily convert and go one stage further? I think it's going to get harder.
She does seem like a classic instance of a player who gets too down on herself after mistakes, but I've got to say that Pegula has such little cut through for us that I very rarely watch her, which is a terrible thing to say, but... The only thing I can add on this match is that Vondrousova told us that her husband isn't coming to Wimbledon because he has to look after her cat, Frankie.
I have heard so much about that cat today, Simon. It really felt like one of those days of, oh my gosh, Markéta Vondrousova has reached a Wimbledon quarterfinal. No one was prepared for this. Do we know anything about her that's not forehands and backhands? Someone found a cat reference somewhere and we've all just... run with it. I know it's a sphinx cat, which is one of those ones that has no hair. She's keen to point out that they are in fact cute. I'll have to take her word for that. The cat plays Monopoly. Look, these are gifts for you, Simon, if you find yourself having to write a Markéta Vondrousova piece on Friday.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to stand up to a close investigation by the fact checkers, is it?
No, the cat is a fact. The existence of this cat is a fact.
I don't know what piece it chooses for Monopoly. Would it choose a dog?
There is a picture of it sitting on the Monopoly board. That much I know.
Mm. Oh, so you've been roped into the cat stuff as well.
I got presented with this live on air and I was supposed to make something of it. so that was a bit tricky.
It was like the photo was being passed around Wimbledon.
Yes. There's a photo. We found an interesting thing about Markéta Vondrousova.
She also does resemble Lydia the Tattooed Lady, doesn't she? That's the other thing about Markéta.
Who is that? What?
You never heard Lydia the Tattooed Lady?
Nope.
The Muppets made it quite famous. And previously the Marx Brothers. But she's definitely one of the most tattooed players, I'd say.
She is. And actually, there was a piece run on the BBC earlier where they talked in quite a lot of detail about her tattoos, and I didn't engage with it. But it was aimed at people younger than me.
I'm hoping the listeners are going to email in with confirmation that I haven't invented Lydia the Tattooed Lady.
Another thing that
I'm sure they're all over it.
I did know, but that I had banished subconsciously to the confines of my mind, was that Markéta Vondrousova had 3 wrist surgeries last year.
Blimey.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Only came back at the very end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, there are parallels between her and Elena Svitolina. Like, they've only sort of been back playing tennis, each of them, a few months.
Plus, when you see how she hits the ball, you think, how is that possible? How can you actually make this work with your game if you've had such a wrist problem? Great. It's bloody impressive, isn't it?
So now you've got the cat.
Yeah.
The strange Muppets thing from Simon and wrist surgeries, David, if you find yourself on Svitolina Vondrousova on Thursday.
The Johanna Konta drive volley?
That's always
an image that I associate with Markéta Vondrousova.
I was going to say that, actually, because when Vondroušová did reach the French Open final in 2019, she had a really rough deal because she'd never played on Chatrier before the final because of all the scheduling issues at that tournament. And so I think it's nice in a way that she is able to get back into a Grand Slam semi-final. You know, that will be on centre court. She will sort of get that moment. It's sort of got a bit lost the last time she reached the French Open final. I think it was on Mathieu, wasn't it, that match against Konta? And
it was freezing cold.
It was played at like 11 o'clock in the morning.
100 people watching.
She got no recognition. You know, kind of the sort of serious point about these funnies that we've come up with for Vondroušová is people don't really know her, and yet she has reached a French Open final. And I think a big part of that was because she never really got the sort of moment, the stage she deserved then. But
absolutely.
She's is going to get it.
She's number seven, isn't she?
Right.
What, number 42 in the world.
Wow.
Which is just insane. Mm. I always tell you the other day you have like a 0.0016% chance of being top 50 player if you're a woman in the Czech Republic, which sounds low, but it's a lot higher than being anyone from anywhere else.
That's like
Simon's nerdy than I am. I love
like
it when Simon's on.
Football, isn't it? Wow, I absolutely love that stat, Simon.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This edition of the Tennis Podcast is sponsored by Tennis Channel, and Tennis Channel Plus is the place to watch the French Open. They've got every court live, and you can watch on your phone or your smart TV, both in HD. Matt, this sounds like your kind of thing.
Yeah, there's nothing I like more than watching multiple courts with matches everywhere, dipping in to where there's the latest final set tiebreak or even the latest bit of aggro.
And David, don't worry, you can just watch your favourite court, Suzanne Longlen, all day if you want. But whatever you choose, the French Open promises unforgettable moments and new chapters in tennis history.
Do you know, I think in a lot of ways, the French Open is now my favourite slam. It's the strategy of the clay court tennis, the way it challenges players, and particularly now with legends of the game up against a new generation of young players. I cannot wait.
Be there when it happens with daily live coverage beginning on Monday, May the 20th. Subscribe to Tennis Channel Plus to stream daily coverage of Roland Garros. Use promo code TennisPod20 for 20% off your annual subscription. We're going to talk about the men's now. I know you've been focusing on the women's. You're welcome to leave if you've got a piece to write, but you're also very welcome to stay. You still have half a beer.
You're going to have to deal with more of me. Sorry.
Speak now. Excellent. Let's talk about Andrei Rublev and Novak Djokovic and the parallels that we talked to. Well, I posited yesterday between Rublev and Pegula and the ceiling. I think we saw it again from Andrei Rublev, except that he was winning for a bit, David.
Yeah, and he was also playing against arguably the best of all time, and he played well. He worried Djokovic to get that first set. He did what he does, and he did it blooming well. He didn't freeze. That was the best thing. He didn't freeze. He gave everything that he has, and then he ran into Djokovic turning it up a level in the second set. I mean, I took over for commentary in the second set. They went off to do the news, and it was 4-love by the time I got to commentate on it. And where it really turned was in the second game. You could see Djokovic was down our end of the court. We're court level. You suddenly saw Djokovic kind of challenge him almost to a duel out there. It was kind of, come on then, I'm going to stand here on the baseline, I'm not backing down, and I'm going to start muscling this ball. I'm going to put more on it. And they just went toe-to-toe, drop shot, break. And Rublev rushes in and tries to make something of this drop shot. And he doesn't have the hands, he doesn't have the nous around the net and the know-how. And he goes sprawling, losing this point. And actually, he had two break points back in the next game when he could have got himself back on serve. But that's what I like about watching Djokovic these days. He's not just that backboard. And he hasn't been for years, to be honest. If he's playing Medvedev, if he's playing Zverev, he just gives them 1,000 drop shots. Just winds them up. And he started doing that to Rublev, and Rublev continued to play well, but Djokovic is now enjoying his role as the elder statesman. He made that very clear, didn't he?
I was going to say, that quote from him after the match was pretty cold, wasn't it? Where he goes, he says, well, first of all, he said, pressure awakens the most beautiful emotions in me, which, you know, sort of says everything about how he feels like he's going to play in these latter stages. And then he said, they all want the scalp, it ain't happening.
Gotta love it.
Wow.
A similar energy to the remark in at the French Open when he said about the crowd, they can do what they want, yeah. I'll just keep winning.
Yeah.
It's not the first time, it won't be the last time, I'll just keep winning.
This is a freer Djokovic because he's passed the rest, isn't it?
And he doesn't see it. He doesn't really care quite as much, I don't think, about saying the right thing. Mm. He just says whatever he thinks of it more now.
And you've got the Djokovic paradox, which is every opponent goes out there knowing they absolutely have to play their best, possibly find a new best to even make the match competitive. But the opponent's best brings out the best in Djokovic. What is one to do about that?
Oh, it's these are Alex Ferguson type mind games he's now playing on these young lads. Mm. He's going into these interviews and just dropping these things in there that they're going to have to think about, and Carlos Alcaraz style just sort of cramp at the anxiety of it.
They do mentally cramp. I mean, I'm thinking perhaps of Hubert Hurkacz, 6-3 up in the previous round, and in
the biggest sense, Alcaraz at the French Open.
Exactly.
That was a mental cramp related
physical cramp.
Do we think Jannik Sinner will be pervious to those mind games?
No, I actually don't think he will be. I don't think he's going to win.
but not because of the mind games.
I don't think he's going to be affected by that necessarily. I think Sinner will do what he did last year against Novak Djokovic and play really well.
And lose.
I think it's very difficult to judge Jannik Sinner at this tournament. You know, I know rankings are not everything, especially on grass. It's such a specialised surface that doesn't always reflect how good you are, where you are ranked. But he has not faced anyone in the top 78.
It's extraordinary.
Which is a weird cut-off, I know, but because he faced
the 79th player in the world, Matt. Yeah.
Who is he supposed to face? That was like higher ranked. I can't even remember that part of the draw now.
Taylor Fritz, I think was in there.
Oh.
You
can't call
Kasper
it a Shapovalov section, can you? It was an opportunity-laden section. I had Borna Coric in the quarters from that section. Tell me I'm wrong.
I can't.
Oh.
It's savage.
I don't know. He's dealt with all of them very well, but it would have been shocking, frankly, if he'd lost to any of the players that he's played. And I thought he had a terrible 4 or 5 games in the second set today. I mean, Safiulin has played really well this tournament and has a big game, hits a lot of winners, and did in that portion of the match. But Sinner also really dropped his level. But generally, he played great. He sort of has that thing where he lets his arm go on the forehand. There's a sort of elasticity to it. He bends it back and just fires, and his backhand is fantastic, and he can hurt Djokovic for sure. Like he can probably try and do that thing that Wawrinka was used to do of just barrage winners for as long as he possibly can.
And he did a year ago.
Yeah, in the first two sets he did that. So I really think he can hurt Djokovic, but it's so hard to see him actually winning.
The drop shot could be a big factor again, because isn't he very similar to Rublev when he gets to the net? Yes, and he's got to do something so cunning and
he's a better mover
with the ball. It's not necessarily his strength. I think Djokovic is interesting that you see a different Djokovic at each tournament. He reinvents his game and he suits it to the surface.
He's the most adaptable player.
He's not doing the sort of the forehand bombardment here, is he? He's working the points and using the percentages and putting himself in great positions. It doesn't seem like he's hitting the ball as hard to me. But it's like he's just using that movement and his all-court game and the drop shot, like you say. So it's like he's got so many different modes.
Yeah, and that's the thing with grass court tennis. It's not traditionally about blasting the ball. It's deflecting it sometimes.
Does Jannik Sinner have cut through? Because he has got high billing at this tournament, yeah, hasn't he? He's had centre court a couple of times. He's had number one court. I think he had number three court once, but he's not been any lower than that. He's got a Gucci deal.
Well, most of all,
I mean, people like
he's on the Wimbledon poster, which caused such a fuss at the start of the tournament, and which actually was my second most read story the last 3 or 4 years after the one about Raducanu's family when she won the US Open. That poster.
Wow.
Get a life, Telegraph readers.
Really?
People were fascinated by that poster and the Murray family sending kind of a hate mail to the All England Club about
seriously
it.
Though,
all the good work and writing that you've done, Simon.
It's true. I do feel like there's something other people are saying about Jannik Sinner that I'm not. I really like his tennis. I'm interested in him. I'm interested in his talent. I'm interested in the Darren Cahill thing. I'm interested in the potential rivalries that he could develop, obviously one already on the boil with Carlos Alcaraz. That's all great, but if I were marketing for Gucci, I wouldn't be picking up the phone and I wouldn't necessarily be putting him on centre court, but people are like, I don't have a problem with it, I just don't quite get it.
Would you put Rune ahead of him?
I wouldn't give him a Gucci deal, but yes, in terms of
you more interested in Rune? Rune is a much better story.
I go out of my way to watch Rune matches and Alcaraz matches, even when they're expected to win quite easily, because yeah. I just love watching both of those two play tennis. I don't do that so much with Jannik Sinner. I'm very excited for Jannik Sinner to take on Novak Djokovic
and bring that
game.
Yeah.
And I've absolutely loved his matches against Carlos Alcaraz more than any men's matches probably in the last year or so. But if Jannik Sinner is the sort of draw in itself in a Grand Slam when there's so much going on, personally, I'm probably looking elsewhere.
It's probably because Rune is a much more interesting talker, to be fair. I mean, there was a great scene when he did the on-court interview and there was a bunch of Italians who were crowded around and they were going to each other, very tough, very tough. And then as soon as the microphone went in front of Sinner, he said, very tough match, and they all went, yay! Because it all kind of worked out what was coming.
He's got his carrots, hasn't he? The carrots that showed up for his matches in Paris.
Yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't get...
Honestly...
It doesn't get my loins going, but...
weren't they here as well, the carrots?
The only thing I'm really interested in is his tennis, and his tennis against the best, and seeing whether he's closed the gap. He won two sets against Novak Djokovic and really threatened him, and then suddenly the moment Djokovic breaks, it's over. Now Pat Cash in our commentary on BBC Radio today said that Sinner is a 10% better player now than he was then, and don't forget he's added Darren Cahill since then. I do think that if he can get in that position again, Djokovic will have a hard time turning that around.
I've got a feeling Djokovic is a 10% better player now.
Well, I agree with you. I agree with you. I don't think it'll be two sets to love. I think it'll probably go one set all.
And then
Djokovic will win. Once Djokovic gets the foothold, what do you do? I think there's only maybe Alcaraz and Rune, who I actually think have a chance against Djokovic once he gets his foot in. And I still think you have to back Djokovic based on history.
Certainly here.
Yeah,
absolutely. There is stress there to be exploited by an opponent of Djokovic. Look at the difficulty he had trying to close out that third set. That was like Murray trying to close out the Wimbledon title in 2013, wasn't it? That was a real ordeal, even though for all of us we were thinking, this is in the bag, Novak. What are you stressing about?
Relax.
He was feeling it, wasn't he? And that's against Andre Rublev, who's kind of his bunny. Like, if somebody can really tap into that. But his aura is so powerful now. I think it's as powerful as it has ever been. I think he is in
100%.
Opposition's heads more than he has ever been.
Especially now Nadal and Federer are not around.
Yeah.
That has made a massive difference, I think.
Of the three Sams this year, he's been the least dominant here, hasn't he?
Yeah, and actually that was the same last year at Wimbledon. He lost a lot of sets at Wimbledon last year.
It could be a function of grass, I suppose.
I think it is, right? I think he's...
Grass is such a small margins game, so few points to turn a set, and if you're up against Hubert Hurkacz,
exactly,
to serve like that.
Exactly. But, I mean, he did lose... I think he lost six sets here last year, and that is way more than he's lost at the sort of slams he's won recently. And I think it's exactly as Simon says, grass, finer margins. And yet, that just makes it sort of all the more extraordinary that he's able to dominate this tournament as he has done, because the margins are smaller. Mm. And I also think those moments where he is in trouble, like closing out that third set where Rublev was really pressuring him and trying to get it back on track, it just feels like Djokovic just grows a bit stronger and a little bit tougher with all those moments. I think in the short term, it might feel like you're getting closer to Djokovic when that happens. But in the long term, he's just...
It's the David Brent performance review thing of my weaknesses are actually strengths. I work too hard. I want it too much. There aren't actually any weaknesses because he manages to make a positive of all of them. So those semi-finals will be in 2 days' time. Tomorrow we have the next raft of quarterfinals, and my goodness me, I'm in love with the order of play tomorrow. Centre court is Ons Jabeur against Elena Rybakina.
I'm commentating on that.
Are you?
Yeah.
Go on, David.
Yes.
What's going to happen then?
Oh, God, no idea. I have a feeling that Ons Jabeur is going to win it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I haven't seen her play this tournament. I've seen Rybakina play and look awesome.
She's awesome.
She has looked good.
I suppose I kind of feel that maybe Kvitova's not the worst preparation for facing Rybakina. Okay, it's a different angle of ball because you've got a left-hander versus a right-hander, but just wonder whether maybe... she's going to go in with the same mindset of, right, just don't give her the same ball twice. Just keep bringing her forward. See if you can expose the movements.
Keep drop-shotting on service return.
Honestly, yes. I really think that maybe Jabeur is a little freer playing Rybakina in this match in the quarterfinals than she would be in the final.
Is Rybakina a better player than when she won Wimbledon last year?
I would say yes, I think.
Is Jabeur?
I would say no. Doesn't do much for my argument, does it?
You're on your own there, David.
You know you won last year,
the
right?
Corner.
I think Rybakina.
Yeah.
But I've found it really hard to gauge on Jabeur, as I said, from that Petra Kvitova match. And honestly, kind of hard to gauge Rybakina because... so many of her opponents this tournament haven't provided anywhere near the resistance that Ons Jabeur, I think, will. But it's hard to look past that serve and that 1-2 punch that Rybakina has got. I just think this surface is so great for her game.
Yeah, I agree. That is followed by Carlos Alcaraz against Holger Rune.
Hell yes.
I'm just going to sit on centre court tomorrow. But that means I'll miss what's happening on court one.
Well,
I don't know what to do. And there's a Taylor Swift pre-sale tomorrow.
It's
too
put
much.
Put your earphone in because I'm also doing Daniil Medvedev against Christopher
Are
Ugrich.
You?
Yes.
So I went to the Legends Doubles media hour at 10 a.m.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a bit of a bun fight. We're all held back behind airport-style cordons. And they're brought over to us and we stick our arms out and hope that we can maintain this position with the arm extended for as long as possible while the scrum forms. But the main takeaway was that I spoke to James Blake, I spoke to Kim Clijsters, and the warm feelings towards Eubanks are just overwhelming. And it was such a lovely start to the day to hear these people. They're clearly just overjoyed for this guy because everyone loves him. And yeah. I spoke to John Wertheim as well, who commentated alongside him, or maybe pundited alongside him for Tennis Channel. I mean, like, I've got so many superlatives. I got to write a preview for that one.
Oh, great.
So many superlatives from all those people about him. It was just a lovely way to start the day.
Imagine how much belief what Chris Eubanks is doing will be giving right now to players that were in the position, that are right now in the position he was in 6 months ago, 9 months ago, a year ago, floundering on the Challenger Tour, wondering if it's worth it, wondering if the breakthrough will ever come, wondering if they can compete at the top level. He's got to be the poster boy for all of that. And I don't know, none of us are American, but I suspect that story is going really big in America because it's all, you know, it's the American dream stuff, isn't it? If you believe hard enough, you can make anything of yourself. And
we actually talked about that. We talked about what will it be like at the US Open. We're already getting ahead of ourselves with James Blake, and he was saying it was like when I, James Blake, went up there for the first time and I drove into New York and my dreadlocks were on a billboard. And I was like, what? Maybe Eubanks might not be quite the same level yet, but he was talking about Eubanks to suggest that because his connection with the fans, he said, Blake said, players who are themselves on court, and I include Sampras in that, who was withdrawn on court but he was himself, like Safin breaking rackets, he was himself, and Eubanks has that natural connection with the fans, and that will mean that he becomes a big noise fast.
The other thing is that Eubanks isn't done yet. I mean, right now, he's a certain level of celebrity. Just imagine if you went and beat Medvedev.
I think he's got a chance. Like, I do favour Medvedev. I don't think he's got the chance that he had against Tsitsipas. So I think Medvedev is better with a target than Tsitsipas is, crucially. But I think he has a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I would back Medvedev to win, but then I would have backed most of Eubanks' opponents to win.
Yeah.
He played well against him in Miami.
He did.
That was a close match, and that was, you know, on a hard court. And as we know, Medvedev is a specialist in hard courts. And I think Eubanks might be able to make Medvedev really uncomfortable tomorrow. I'm excited for that one, and I'm very excited for Alcaraz Runa. Did you see the little questions that were put to both of them about which shot they would take from the other player?
Tell me everything.
Because they've really, you know, they know each other well. They played doubles together in Le Petit Zahar when they were juniors. You know, they've really grown up together. And Runa gave the most spectacularly Runa answer to that question. He said, not a lot. he said, I'm pretty happy with my own game and my own weapons.
I love that. And then he's wrong, but yeah. I love it.
And then eventually he came up with the forehand drop shot that he would take from Alcaraz.
Through the zone.
Yeah. Whereas Alcaraz gave a very sort of a very nice, polite answer and said, I would have his backhand. He said, not that my own backhand's bad, but his is amazing.
You probably would take.
I mean, Runa's backhand.
Runa's got a better backhand.
Yeah, Runa's backhand is absolutely class. Yeah, I loved that little, not a lot.
I'm so pumped for that match.
My son loves Runa.
He cuts through. Yeah, well, I can.
Yeah.
We know your son, and that does not surprise me.
Yeah. Yeah. I reckon both of them are a handful on their family WhatsApp groups.
Can confirm.
The other match that we haven't yet talked about on the schedule tomorrow is Madison Keys against Aryna Sabalenka.
They're all so interesting, these matches, aren't they? It's kind of like old power against new power.
World number one is in play for Sabalenka now. She just needs to reach the final. I mean, I say just. That she still has to go through Madison Keys.
That is big.
And then either Ons Jabeur or Elena Rybakina. It still feels quite a long way away. But, yeah, that's in play for her. And that would feel like a big moment, I think, if the world number one in the women's game did switch hands. Because Iga Świątek has been... I think, so dominant, so clearly the world number one for a long time. But we've spoken all year about Rybakina and Sabalenka closing that gap. If one of them, Sabalenka, does manage to overtake, that would be a pretty significant moment, I think.
Does anyone give Keys a big chance tomorrow? Obviously, it's tennis. Everybody has a chance. But does anyone rate Keys' chances tomorrow?
I kind of feel like her underdog status might help her because she's such a big hitter. I just feel as though the power of the ball coming at her and her big swings may mean she's not able to connect in quite the way she wants to. That's my sense. But yeah, I make Sabalenka the favourite, but Keys, if she has an on day, still feels like she could knock anybody off the court.
For the sake of your stars, Simon, what finals do you want?
Explain the concept of stars.
Simon's is Simon's performance review system, yeah, essentially.
Yeah, seriously. What finals would you like as a correspondent's perspective?
From a news perspective, you can't go past Svitolina Sabalenka.
Mm. More than Svitolina Jabeur. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Definitely.
And an Alcaraz Djokovic final in the men's would be a good up in lights. Although Runa
Djokovic would be pretty decent. I mean, in some ways, Runa's actually a better story because he's so spiky.
Yeah, and he's beaten him twice as well.
Perhaps a slightly more tennis-y story. I don't know.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
I think for us, it rates pretty highly as a story, but news-wise maybe a little bit less interesting. Couple of other bits and bobs for you. Matt's been watching his new fave, Darwin Blanche, again. Future Wimbledon champion.
Oh, FWC.
Darwin Blanche and Newly Niemeyer.
What's FWC?
FFOC?
Future Wimbledon champion. Future Olympic champion?
FFO, French Open, maybe. I think he's a lot more comfortable on the clay than he is the grass. He'd only just played his first tournament on grass in Roehampton a couple of weeks ago. But yeah, into the third round, beat a Brit today. He's just a good watch, and Juan Carlos Ferrero is at all of his matches, and he's...
Good sign.
And he's hitting with Carlos Alcaraz.
He doesn't waste his time, does he?
No. Yeah, and
he's a better talent spotter than Matt, even.
Similar.
When are you going to start your academy, Matt?
We have reached the formalities stage of proceedings, Simon. Buckle in. We have our Wimbledon mascot, Erin. Hello to Erin.
Hello,
Erin. We have our mascots. I've got Xenia. What did I have today? It didn't...
Djokovic in three. Oops.
Go on then, David.
Tell what David got.
I had Sinner in four. So that's two in 2 days.
Matt and Darwin?
No, we had Jessica Pegula in three. We got Von Droshevud.
Oh, you're so close.
Shame.
We're always so close, Simon. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss. We have top folks and executive producers, Jamie, Hannah, and Drew. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We have Eleanor Liederbach from Valley City, Ohio.
Oh.
Valley City. That's the sort of place that only exists in America, isn't it?
Mm.
Valley
City. Is that
City.
Like Eleanor
That's
Rebecca
like
yes.
oh. the sort of locations that you get on video games, like Grand Theft Auto.
Have you played a lot of Grand Theft Auto?
I did when I was a kid, yeah.
Desperately trying to keep that out of the clutches of my son.
Yeah, it's not a good influence.
No.
I don't think it was a good thing for my development. Anyway, thank you, Eleanor.
We've also got Adam Booth, who is originally from Manchester, but now lives in Newcastle, Australia.
Wow!
I've driven through Newcastle, Australia.
Right, Adam.
Hello, Adam.
Adam says that he loves Catherine's annual appearances on Offsiders. Such a treat to have, quote, our Catherine on Aussie telly.
I love my annual appearances on Offsiders as well. Any tennis, Adams?
Can't think of one.
I might have to get back to you. And consult with Mary Carillo.
Yes.
Adam. No. Wow, it was quite a common name for there to be none.
That is a surprise.
Last shout out.
Cheers, Adam.
Lastly, we have Brad.
We will do better for you, Adam. We'll get back to you.
We have Brad Hanna and Nigel Harding, who want to be known as Brangle Hunning.
Okay. Right, Brangle Hunning.
Because that is how they are commonly known, or because they're trying to make that happen via the tennis podcast.
Good decision.
I sense that they thought that maybe they'd be being cheeky, asking for two shout-outs, so they tried to come up with
one. So we're soft-launching Brangle Hunning right here and now.
Yeah,
I'm into it.
Me and too. Thank you, Brangle Hunning.
They're from London.
Oh, great. Great place. Mm. We're in it right now. I have one last bit of business, and that is that I met two of Simon's friends earlier, Laura and Darren.
That's the ones, yes.
I asked them what off-duty Briggs was like.
Oh, my God.
What do you think they would have said?
No, they've already told me, actually, so I can't play this game.
They've ruined it.
No. Can you tell me?
They said you were the same. Delightful, obviously. Darren said, maybe a bit louder and cockier.
Hard to believe, really.
Do you accept that, Simon?
Oh, I don't know. I think that's a bit mean.
There's a friendship
they
over.
They were also complimentary of your tennis and paddle game, if that is any mitigation at all.
Yeah, we played doubles paddle at the LTA, and we played doubles tennis in Beaconsfield, so we're covering all the bases. Darren used to be my hitting partner, but he's kind of gone to paddle now. He's gone to the dark side, so he doesn't hit with me anymore. And when I do get him out for a hit, he turns up and he has a canister of balls, and they turn out to be paddle balls.
As long as he doesn't get that rubbish pickleball.
You've just mentioned pickleball live on air, David. That's what they want. That's what the pickleball people want.
Slag it off.
You've played right into their hands, Simon. It has been an absolute pleasure to have you on the tennis podcast.
Thanks,
David and Matt,
me.
It's always a pleasure. If you've enjoyed the tennis podcast, or have generally enjoyed the tennis podcast live on YouTube, please hit the like and subscribe button. If you're listening as per usual as a podcast, do leave us an Apple Podcast review if you have the time and inclination. Sign up to the newsletter. Got a tease for the stat today, Matt?
The stat, honestly, has been usurped by King of the 90s. I'm all about King of the 90s these days, and just an incredible moment happened earlier.
Yeah, my moment of the tournament happened was King of the 90s related.
Aren't I taking part in King of the 90s? How come I don't know anything about it?
You will. You will soon. And if you want to know, you can subscribe to the newsletter. Mm. It is free, and the link to do it is in our show notes, as is the link to become a friend of the pod if you'd like to support us year-round. We would love it if you did that. You can get yourself an intro. You can get yourself a shout-out. If you're called Adam and you'd like to become a friend and get yourself a shout-out, don't worry. We're going to find a tennis Adam for you. That's top of our to-do list. Most importantly, thank you ever so much for listening or watching, or both if you're doing that. And we will see you and speak to you tomorrow.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.